Up and Vanish Weekly is released every Wednesday and brought to you absolutely free. But for 1 week early access and ad-free listening, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, thank you for your support.
This podcast discusses mature and sensitive content, including descriptions of violence that may be triggering for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, y'all. Welcome to Up and Vanish Weekly. I'm Maggie Freeling. Most of the conversations we bring you each week focus on an unsolved case. Our hope, of course, is that our reporting will somehow help bring resolution. At times, we've also brought you discussions with experts and influencers in a variety of professions whose work has some kind of crossover with the cases we spotlight. And so today, we're speaking with one of those influencers, Sherilyn Dale. She's a true crime content creator who focuses on victims and their families. Most creators try to adhere to best practices, especially in true crime where emotions often run high. This is especially important to Sherilyn, who also uses her platform to place an emphasis on mental health. The Tenderfoot team recently attended CrimeCon, an annual conference dedicated to all things true crime, and one of our producers, John, had the chance to sit down with Sherilyn while in Denver to learn more about her background and its unique place in the true crime ecosystem. So here's a bit of their conversation.
Well, Sherilyn, thank you so much for sitting down with me. Appreciate you making the time. I know it's a busy weekend for you. For anyone who doesn't know, tell a little bit more about who you are.
So I'm Sherilyn Dale. I'm a true crime creator on YouTube. That's primarily where my platform is. I've been doing true crime for about 6 years. And I think like about a year into it is when I really started, I guess, having the courage to reach out to families. I think there was like this, I don't know, hesitation that I didn't want to intrude or I didn't want to upset anybody. So I would try to find out more about cases like from the information that was out there. And when I couldn't, I was like, oh, I'll just try it and see how it goes. And I ended up working with the Elmquist family, David Elmquist. There was just so many questions about the case and I reached out and I ended up going to stay with the family for a week or a weekend. And that was just like the push that got me into working directly with victims and survivors and their loved ones and hearing what they specifically want to cover. Because I find like sometimes we just have an idea of maybe what an audience wants or what we're interested in. And it's often not what the family wants to focus on. So I like doing that. It's definitely harder. You get like a attachment, but I think that that's important.
What got you into true crime to begin with? Were you always a true crime fan, like ever since you were younger?
It's my mom right there watching Dateline 48 hours. So I was just kind of always on and had an interest in it. And then I found Kendall Ray on YouTube and I was like, oh my gosh, people talk about true crime on YouTube. And then you kind of just felt like not so alone that like, I feel like there's like this point where you kind of like look at yourself, like, why am I watching this? You know, and then seeing the why. And that's like kind of like what I like to focus on, too, is much more about the victims. I rarely like will touch on, you know, like the perpetrator at all. I want to know the victim's story. I want to know all of their, you know, background about their family. That's kind of where that curiosity peaked was if I didn't get enough of it from like the show that we were watching, I'm like, I got to go and look more into that.
So when you started your platform, obviously there had been other people doing it. You know, you mentioned Kendall Ray. Did you have like a specific goal in mind or did you have like an idea of how to differentiate yourself from maybe others who are already in the space?
Honestly, not really. I look up to her so much because I find that she's so compassionate. She also loves to work with like victims and their families. So I really took like a lot of inspiration from her. And I think finding your own style is one thing, but also wanting to like make an example, like for other like newer creators coming in, I wanted them to like see more people like Kendall as well. Not that I'm like dogging on anybody, but I don't like when it's more sensationalized. I feel like true crime is such a sensitive topic. And nowadays, because it's growing so much, people are, I don't know, kind of missing the point. Yeah.
So obviously your following has continued to grow, and we'll get into it here in a few minutes, but obviously you've expanded the platforms that you are on as well. But I'm curious, like, why do you feel like people have really gravitated towards the content that you put out, and you continue to get new subscribers, new followers, new listeners?
I think, like, just based on what I've heard from other people, is that I've tried to be as authentic as I possibly can. And really, just that was always my goal from starting. And that's a tip that I give to people. I say, like, when I first started true crime, like, you have to be aware that that first video you put out and the first 20, no one's going to watch them. Okay. It's going to be your mom and your best friend. So that's who I was looking at my camera thinking of. Right. And it was, if this didn't feel authentic to my best friend or my parents, I don't want to put it out there. So I feel like I've always just really showed who I am. I've fumbled my words a lot. I'm not very articulate. I talk about mental health a lot. And I didn't ever want to, like, paint a pretty picture of somebody that I wasn't. And I don't know. I think maybe that's it. Just feels like you're talking to a friend, maybe. Yeah.
Have you gone back and watched, like, your first videos?
No, since? I'm horrified, okay. Actually, at the thought. And it's funny, as my channel's been growing, you kind of get the people who want to start binging things. And I'll see a comment on, like, a video I completely forgot about. And I'm like, oh, my God, what are we doing down here, guys? Like, this year we're in the trenches.
So obviously you talked a little bit about families and how important it is working with family. So I'd like to dig into that a little bit for a few minutes. What does that process look like for you to work with a family, to report on a loved one's case?
It's hard. So it's a very, like, a grounding experience, I think, at first. I'll look into the case as much as I possibly can, so I'm not asking a lot of, like, the invasive, repetitive questions, because at the same time, I want to be sensitive to them having to retell the story. So I kind of approach it like, you know, like, I want to cover your case if that's something that you're comfortable with. And if you could, you know, choose certain things for me to focus on, what would that look like? And honestly, like, I have yet to come across somebody who's said no. They're actually usually, like, quite thankful. Somebody that I worked with in the past year, she's actually here promoting her own podcast now, and she's covering her mom's unsolved murder. And so now she's got a podcast. And so she was another person that I saw. She had made a TikTok kind of and was like, I need your help. And it kind of went from there.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Like, what benefit have you seen from the cases that you've reported on, outside of giving a platform for families to be able to, you know, share more about their loved one? Have you seen anything else positive come from your reporting?
Yes, in terms of getting like, for the platform and have more eyes on cases. That's another thing that I think is very hard, is when you see an injustice and you know that there's something wrong and you can't help them. There is a lot of positive, but there's a lot of frustrations about it as well, because you can see that something is broken and needs attention. And, you know, we're just kind of somebody with a microphone and don't have, like, an actual, you know, degree, or, like, we're not law enforcement. So I guess good for, you know, spreading awareness, but it feels helpless sometimes.
We'll be right back after a quick break. And we're back.
So I know that you mentioned that there's never really been a case that you've wanted to pursue that the family was not willing to participate. If that ever did happen, would that keep you from kind of moving forward, or how would you kind of treat that process?
If they weren't comfortable, like, talking about it or be involved in it, that would just be, it would just be full stop. If it was something that they kind of were okay with me continuing to investigate based on the material that's already out there, I would go from there. But yeah, I mean, nothing is worth upsetting anybody. And that's definitely not the goal in these situations.
And what does your process look like when you find a case that, you know, is interesting to you, compelling, you made the decision to move forward? What does your research and kind of investigatory process look like?
Oh my gosh, it's chaotic. It'll usually start, yeah, just by seeing how many podcasts or whatever's already out there. First, also, like, kind of assessing where things are at. Is it necessary? You know, like, are there cases that need more attention right now? If it's something that I can't stop thinking about, then I'll just, like, go into, like, a deep dive. So now I thankfully have somebody who helps me occasionally be able to research, because I need to know everything. So if there's podcasts, if there's articles written about it, if there's a documentary, like, I want to be in all of it.
Yeah, find out as much as you can and start from there.
Yeah.
So I know one of the other things that was made mention is that you really want to talk about the idea of, like, ethical true crime. What does that mean to you, or what does that look like?
I think with everything that you put out there, solely focused on the severity of the situation and having the families in mind and their loved ones too, right? I think especially with like forums like TikTok, it's something goes like so viral. And I don't think a lot of people are seeing or, you know, like understanding that the chances of family or friends seeing that are very, very high. So I think that if we can really hammer in the idea that, are you okay if they see this? Are you comfortable saying what you're going to say right now, knowing that the family is most likely going to see that? And if the answer is yes, then it's probably okay. If it's no, let's not do that.
Have you seen an example, and you don't need to name names, but just, you know, of reporting or coverage on a case that you feel has been unethical?
Yeah.
All right, we'll leave it there. No. So one thing that I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, it used to be that reporting on these types of cases, you know, was exclusively done by like legacy media. You know, I think you're a great example of people finding platforms on YouTube and socials and podcasting to be able to report, you know, on cases. Have you seen any like negative aspects or like dangers come from like the, you know, quote unquote, like citizen sleuth type movement that's happened over the last several years?
Oh, definitely. I think especially when there's like a theory and it's an ongoing investigation and then it's just kind of like the dogpiling of like a certain theory that could be like out, like completely not relevant to the case or not factual. I do find that that is kind of where it gets a little bit dicey, especially to like ongoing cases.
So how do you feel like balance can be struck between letting professionals do the work that, you know, they're trained to do, but also knowing that consumers and, you know, quote unquote, like sleuths at home have done quite a bit of like positive work on a number of cases. Do you feel like there's a specific way that balance can be struck there?
You just never know, I guess, right? Like with Luca Magnotta, you know, you essentially did have investigators on it. So behind the scenes, we didn't really know what was going on until all of that came out in the documentary, but they're like working with them. So I feel like there could be a balance if you're willing to like work with investigators maybe and not just like go and throw out an idea and then just like, you know, say like, come over here. This is what happened. Like do your job. You know, that's another thing with the Idaho 4 case. Found that really fascinating to see how upset people were that it wasn't like solved fast enough. And I thought that that was like record speed. Like they caught him pretty quickly. But that was a very interesting case to see like unfold on social media. And even now, I think that there's like a lot of dangerous theories out there about the survivors that I find very unsettling to watch. So I guess that's an example kind of that question that you asked.
So obviously we've talked a lot about, you know, your YouTube and, you know, kind of social push, but in recent years, you've also expanded into podcasting. What has that transition been like for you? Has that been challenging in any way?
I love it. I'm definitely, that's kind of like where my heart is going into the limited series podcasts. The first one that I produced, I am not on it very much. I just, you know, produced it, did a little bit of writing, but it was actually with the family, the very first family that I went out and stayed and worked with. Okay. And it's David's dad, Scott, who narrates the entire thing about his son's case. So that was so meaningful to me, like to be able to help him and show him what to do and put it all together and see that come together. And that was all him. And it allowed him to have his voice shared. Yes. So I'm really loving that. Right now I'm having fun. Also, me and my co-host Chelsea Suarez, we just produced a podcast called Elizabeth. And it's about a serial con artist she's actually quite established on TikTok. She's got a really big following, which allows her to continue to con people. So that's 8 parts and we're going to do another season and I love it.
What made you decide to not just, you know, talk about, report the case, investigate, but then actually commit to doing like a limited series on it, which is, as you know, it's a lot more work. It's a lot more hours. You know, what was kind of that deciding factor for you?
I think because we initially planned to talk about it on our podcast. So her and I have just kind of a little like, you know, gossipy podcast and we'll talk about trending topics of the week on it. And so this was kind of one of them that was coming up. But as we started looking into it, it was just getting out. We couldn't do a 45 minute episode on it. I mean, we've got 8 episodes and I think all of them are around 45 minutes to an hour. It's just so much. So it kind of just decided for itself that there's too much and too many stories that need to be told here of trying to like wrap this into like a one episode thing.
So I'm curious, you know, you obviously have gained a following on social media, but on the flip side, you know, now you're talking about, you know, this other individual who's, you know, leveraging social media in a negative way. How does that make you feel?
Frustrated.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? Like, so when we say something on our podcast, you're either a clout queen or you're a clout goblin. So when you have people like that, and then you know that a platform like TikTok is continuing to monetize them, it's very frustrating.
Back after a short break.
Hey, listeners, if you have a tip or theories about a case you want to share, or a case of interest you'd like to recommend to us, then we want to hear from you. Email us, cases@tenderfoot.tv. DM us on Instagram @UAVweekly, or give us a call at 770-545-6411. You can also join the conversation on our Discord at discord.gg/upandvanished. Now, back to the show.
The last thing I wanted to spend some time talking through with you is just mental health. I know that you had mentioned it earlier on. I know this is something that's incredibly important to you personally. Why is it something that hits so close to home?
Yeah, and I think nowadays too, like as we're seeing more and more people kind of like test the waters with true crime, it is really important to kind of like know what you're getting into, especially if you do want to do it ethically and like have that. You are definitely taking on a different heaviness when you are doing things like communicating with families, even just like looking deep into case files. It's a lot. So I think for the first couple of years, I was so wrapped up in just, you know, go, and had this, you know, this mission in mind that I wasn't able to like step back and actually check in with myself. And I crashed out. I had to take some time off. And then you feel guilty about that because you're like, I should be doing more. Why do I feel this way? So now definitely having a healthy balance of limiting myself. So it's like strict kind of like work hours and shut myself off and actually commit to that, because I was going all day, every single day, and that it's heavy. I think learning to say that it was okay to shut off at the end of the day or take a day if you need to, it's going to be okay. And it's not worth, you know, like getting that video out or talking about this specifically, finding the balance of, you know, responsible reporting, ethical reporting, but also taking care of yourself.
I think in some ways it could feel like maybe it's a trendy topic to talk about, but I think in reality it's, you know, it's becoming more socially acceptable to be candid and honest and talk about it and, you know, just talk about the challenges that come with it and talk about putting boundaries in place, you know, for different things, especially for those of us who work in true crime. I mean, it's really heavy content that we deal with on a regular basis. And especially if you're reporting on a lot of cases over a long period of time, it definitely can take its toll. I am curious, I mean, do you feel like there's been progress in society when it comes to not only talking about mental health, but also just like properly dealing with it?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, just even looking back on, I was first diagnosed with depression when I was 15 years old. And so at that time, I mean, I'm almost 40. I'll be 40 next year. So like, it was a very taboo. You didn't really talk about it. I didn't want to tell any of my friends that I needed to take medication. And I was embarrassed. There's a stigma. And nowadays I find, yeah, I think social media has helped a lot of people, you know, feel less alone. And even me, you know, like someone will say something and I'll be like, oh, that's actually like a, you know, like a really cool tool or method or something, you know, a little check-in, right? But it's something that I would have never seen because it's somebody across the world that's giving tips and tricks on how they've managed, you know, like anxiety or something like that. So, no, I definitely think that there's a positive breaking a stigma, talking about it. And I feel like if you talk about mental health, you kind of also have like people like who like root for you, right? And it opens them to share it as well. But then you also have people in your corner who, like I said, I have a lot of anxiety when I'm filming just in my room. You know, I talk a lot with my hands. And so if somebody comments on it and they just come across my channel randomly, you know, I've got my OGs in there that are like, she's socially awkward. Like, you know, like she's got anxiety, leave her alone. You know, so it's not, you know, you've got people who have your back.
That's important. Always have to have people in your corner.
Yeah.
So if somebody listens to this or, you know, is newer to following you and, you know, they see what you do, you know, they appreciate the reporting and the coverage that you bring to cases and they wanted to do the same thing, is there any kind of advice that you would give them? Where would you tell them to start?
Oh my gosh, I would just say do it. Don't overthink it. Just do it. I think that was like my biggest regret was that I didn't do it sooner. And also have that in mind that, you know, if you're putting out those first few videos, it's your mom watching, babe. Like, it's going to be okay. You're not going to go viral on the first video. It's going to be okay. I was like, oh, this is it, man. Like, I'm ready to go. I got the camera. I got the lights. I put it out. I got 20 views. And I was like, oh my God, I suck, right? Like, it was a really humbling experience. And then, you know, that was my goal. I wanted that to be my career. And so I kept at it. And I mean, if you don't give up, I feel like you're able to accomplish anything. And my mom, I call her my delusion feeder. She's told me, you know, my whole life, you can do anything you want. And so giving up wasn't an option. So it's like, don't overthink it. Just do it.
Well, obviously, you know, you stuck with it and it's worked out very well, not just in terms of your success and the growth that you've had, you know, with your following, but also just the number of cases that you've been able to talk about. Well, Sherilyn, thank you so much for sitting down. If you just want to take a quick minute, let people know where they can find you, you know, check out your new show, anything else you want to say about that?
Okay, so you can find me on YouTube, Sherilyn Dale. We also have the limited series, Elizabeth. The Stack Deck is the other limited series. That's it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Listening to Sherilyn is a great reminder that ethics are a very important part of what true crime content creators and journalists do. If we lose credibility with survivors, victims, and their families, then we stand to lose everything. I also appreciate Sherilyn's focus on mental health awareness. This is something that for a decade I have been paying attention to. And especially when teaching, I tell my students about my own struggles because we have all been there. True crime is often a heavy subject that can bring about a range of emotions. So it's important to recognize that, as well as remember that regardless of the smile on someone's face, you never know what battles are being fought behind the scenes. Y'all, thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Up and Vanish Weekly. Be sure to tune in next week as we dig into another new case. Until next time.
Up and Vanish Weekly is a production of Tenderfoot TV in association with Odyssey. Your hosts are Maggie Freeling and myself, Payne Lindsay. The show is written by Maggie Freeling, myself, and John Street. Executive producers are Donald Albright and myself. Lead producer is John Street. Additional production by Meredith Stedman and Mike Rooney. Research for the series by Jamie Albright, Celicia Stanton, and Carolyn Talmadge. Edit and mix by Dylan Harrington and Sean Nerney. Supervising producer is Tracy Kaplan. Artwork by Byron McCoy. Original music by Makeup and Vanity Set. Special thanks to Oren Rosenbaum and the team at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. For more podcasts like Up and Vanish Weekly, search Tenderfoot TV on your favorite podcast app or visit us at tenderfoot.tv. Thanks for listening.